Hound Dogs. I'm David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And welcome to On the Air with Power Squared, a weekly look behind what we hope will be everyone's favorite comic book, Power Squared. This week, though, we're going to do something a little different and go behind the scenes of another endeavor, Trophy Unlocked.
Yes.
Which Paul started 10 years ago today.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Trophy Unlocked. Your first review was Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
What made you decide to start a blog with that?
Well, we were in line for it at the El Capitan, and the idea just suddenly popped into my head to do it. I had already actually, there was a period of time where I was on DeviantArt. I've kind of erased that part, but, and some of my journals on there, I would review stuff, and I liked doing it, so I decided to dedicate a blog to doing that.
And how did you choose the name Trophy Unlocked?
I just wanted a video game reference.
Okay. That's amazing.
Kind of combining the PlayStation and Xbox achievement systems.
Okay. So your first review was Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
And then what kept you doing it? So your idea was, you like reviewing things, you just kept doing it, right?
Yeah.
And you brought Trevor in.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then later you brought me in.
Yeah.
Sort of try to do, so the original focus was movies, video games, and comic books related, right?
Well, the video game comics thing came later.
Okay.
And I considered that a failed experiment because I'm not good at reviewing comic books.
But you still review video games.
Yeah.
Which you're good at doing. And so you brought me in later to sort of do kind of older movies to sort of give the blog a more of a perspective.
So. And because I was, or some things like True Grit, I was not going to be good at doing that kind of thing.
Right.
Because at the time I didn't have experience with that kind of movie.
Right. So I've been doing it. So I've been doing kind of older films and some current releases, but not video games.
Yeah.
And you and Trevor do video games and movies.
Yeah.
A lot of animated movies.
Yes.
The blog has a lot of, I like the fact that there's movies from the 1890s to 2020 on there.
Yeah.
That's a nice and, you know, bookend. And you have, a wide range of things that you've reviewed.
Yeah.
Right. So is there some, do you have a favorite review that you've done?
Actually, one review I had been thinking about more was my review of Death Stranding from last year. I think it was last year. That was a big Hideo Kojima game. And that review was in Word, which is where I write the reviews first. That was like 10 pages. That was because there was a lot to it. So I think I liked being able to get very in-depth on exactly what did and didn't work about it. Or I liked this, but not this part of it, or stuff like that.
Has there ever been a time when you got kind of tired? I mean, is sort of doing a blog on a consistent basis can get kind of wearing. Is there any time that you kind of like got tired of doing it?
Yeah. There was a point where I kind of wasn't having fun doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That actually happened to be around my first review of DMC Devil May Cry. After that, I wasn't so sure I wanted to keep doing it, partly because of that review, I got too swept up in the controversy surrounding it, so I wasn't as objective as I could have been. And for a while, I played games without reviewing them, because I just wanted to have fun. I guess, in a sense, it felt like a job at some point.
Right.
But after I re-reviewed DMC Devil May Cry through the Definitive Edition. I suddenly got more energetic about doing it again because I feel like I kind of conquered a demon, mm-hmm. in a sense. Right.
So besides the three of us,
yeah,
who else has, anybody else reviewed stuff? I see there are a few guest reviews occasionally. It's been a while.
Yeah, there was one person who's, there was a friend that I brought up, tried to bring in at one point, but they only put up like two things.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also a failed experiment.
You have to try.
And I occasionally, a couple of times, brought someone in to help fill out a list that we did, which we have since kind of redone on our own, based on stuff we had, based on games we had played since that. And I think I also got them to do an April Fool's post.
Okay.
I had to rein in the tone a little.
So, and it's not just, I mean, there's over 1100 posts, but reviews, but there's actually like another 100 or so other posts on there.
Yeah.
And what are those when you do them?
Well, a couple of them, at least a couple of them are like top 10 lists,
right,
which are, you know, kind of lazy content, but it helps fill something out. Some of them are review hubs, which is collections of reviews. Mm-hmm. I've considered making another page to try to catalog the reviews better.
Okay.
I just haven't gotten around to doing it because that would be a lot of work.
Right.
There's also like end of year posts that we've done, and other special posts like that time we ranked the entire MCU.
Right. So it's, so there's variety to what's on there.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So for your 10th anniversary post.
Yes.
You chose.
The Last of Us Part 2, which for those of you watching, I have right here.
Okay. So what prompted you to choose The Last of Us Part 2 as that post?
Well, I guess I'll first bring up, this also doubles as review 1125.
Okay.
So yep. That's a small milestone right there.
Okay.
But I picked that because for the 10th anniversary, I wanted to do something big. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted it to feel like a 10th anniversary thing, mm-hmm. instead of just something random, like what had happened a couple years. Like, one time it was kind of a not so great review of Star Wars Episode 8 because it was just happened to be at the time.
Right.
Or there was at least one other where it was just happened to be at the time, but it wasn't necessarily the best content.
Okay.
But I wanted something that I could, that was like big, it made some kind of impact, and something I could really dive into.
Okay. So, I'm holding up the
game right now.
Right. For those listening. This won Game of the Year.
Yeah, at the Game Awards and at the Golden Joystick Awards, I want to say.
Okay. But I take it from your review and watching you play that that would not have been your choice.
No.
Okay. So tell us about The Last of Us Part II. What works, what doesn't work? And we also have a review up of that on the blog.
Yes, it's right here.
If you're listening, we're showing the website Trophy Unlocked with the review. Yeah,
so trophyunlocked.blogspot.com. I know it looks kind of basic, but I just don't know what to have as a background.
Okay, that's fine. And we'll post it in the if you're listening, there'll be a link in the post.
Yeah. So anyway. I guess for The Last of Us 2, the story is the most divisive part, so I'll save that for last,
okay.
Like I did in my review.
Okay.
So here's what did work. The graphics are legitimately impressive. At times, it feels like it's not a PS4 game and maybe an early PS5 game. It was impressive just the level of detail they put into that world. The environmental storytelling was really on point. Like, you could look at something and kind of tell what happened. In the snow, when you walk, it leaves tracks and they stay there instead of disappearing.
Right.
The grass moves very realistically. When you modify your gun at a work, or your guns at a workbench, you can actually see the whole gun animation, or the whole animation go through using stuff that's actually on the workbench, and the modifications physically stay on the gun, which is a detail that I had wanted in other games that I had played. The people are rendered really well. Just everything looks really good. And I cannot fault the game at any point for that.
Okay.
I will say I did encounter a couple bits of minor texture loading, but and one time I fell through the map. But those are just like small things in the grand scheme of things that didn't really affect the visual experience that much. I also really liked the wealth of accessibility options. So with the Game Awards, that was kind of the one thing I really agreed with that it would get, which was innovation and accessibility, which was introduced this year. But pretty much anyone of any skill level or any ability can play this game.
Okay.
And maybe beat it.
Okay.
So that was a... Again, I can't fault the game for that.
Okay. I noticed when you were playing, though, so there were some things that you can't, as the player, change.
Right.
They're just sort of there for you, and you have to, like, watch it happen.
Yeah.
Is that... I imagine it's not a good thing for a video game.
Sure. Totally. Save that.
Sure.
So then the voice acting was good, but those are good voice actors, so it's kind of a given. And the music fit thematically with the music from the original, where it was acoustic guitar.
Okay.
Most of the time, I want to say. So then... the story is where it's not so good.
Okay. What about the story?
Okay, so I guess I'll start off by saying that when I played the original Last of Us, I'm holding up the remastered copy on PS4, I thought that ending was perfect because... no matter how you feel about what Joel did at the end of that game, his actions fit with his character up to that point. And it was perfectly open-ended. It was open to discussion on whether or not you agreed with what Joel did.
Okay.
So The Last of Us Part 2 is an unnecessary sequel, but unnecessary sequels can be good, like Portal 2. Or... maybe Spider-Man 2, if depending on who you talk to.
Right.
Spider-Man 2 was really good.
Right. It was, yeah.
Anyway, my point is unnecessary sequels aren't necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
But with The Last of Us Part 2, as I was looking at it as a writer, I felt like... it wanted to tell this very specific story, but they didn't know how exactly to bridge these specific events that they wanted to have happen. So they introduced some contrivance to try to make it work.
Okay.
Like, I guess I'm going to go into spoilers here because it's the only way to talk about that. So Joel dies early.
What? Okay.
And honestly, that's kind of one of the most well-known parts of the game right now. But in order for Joel's death to work, it requires him to kind of act out of character. Some would say he went soft in his 4 years at Jackson, but as I was playing, I didn't get any sense of that at any point. And so as far as I could tell, he acted out of character with no hint of him changing. And then I'm trying to say things off the top of my head. In order for, like, let's say, Abby to know where Ellie is for the climactic fight kind of towards the end of the game, it requires Ellie to just kind of drop her map where it shows exactly where she is. Mm-hmm. So Abby sees that and goes, oh, that's where she is, and goes over there to try to kill her.
Right. That's kind of convenient, yeah.
Yeah. There's also, Ellie kills two people in an aquarium. Abby is not supposed to be there, so, we'll have this other character run away, and Abby chases after them, and that's why she wasn't in the aquarium.
I see.
Things like that bothered me.
Right. Cheap writing tricks.
Yeah. The game, in a way, was full of that. Or the story was.
Mm-hmm.
There were parts of the story that I did like, specifically the characters Yara and Lev, because they're from a cult, and they were running away from that. So that alone is kind of interesting. And then the idea of Abby bonding with Lev was interesting, too, because it was these two warring factions, and they're caught up in a situation where they have to depend on each other to survive, mm-hmm. and they kind of question why they're fighting because of that.
Okay.
That's an interesting storyline.
Right.
Drinking water. The biggest part of the story was that it forces you to do certain things and then tries to make you feel bad about doing them.
Which is the point I was trying to make earlier.
Yeah.
You can't change certain things that happen, right?
Yeah. And that's all to drive point the home that revenge is bad, which is a generic message.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really do anything with that or take advantage of the fact that it's a video game while doing that.
Right.
It's like, there's a point where you are forced to kill a dog to continue, and then the game, you have no ability to avoid killing that specific dog, like you could theoretically other dogs in the game. And then when you play as Abby for half the game, or actually like 8 hours of it ish, there's a scene where you play fetch with that dog, and that dog is also a central character to Abby's side. So that felt like cheap manipulation. And then there's another point where as Ellie, you are forced to kill a woman to advance her story. And then the very, 5 seconds later, you find out that woman was pregnant. So you don't know that going in.
Right.
And then that's supposed to be a big shock.
It's a life or death situation, though.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, you had no choice not to kill the pregnant woman.
Right.
So that again feels like cheap manipulation. So it's like, oh my God, in your revenge, you killed this pregnant woman. It's like, you made me do that. I had no choice.
Right.
And a video game, player agency is really important.
Right.
And so the story doesn't do much to take player agency into account. The only kind of player agency that's there is the gameplay. And even then, the gameplay doesn't really innovate beyond the first game much, aside from you can craft more things, or you can jump and go prone. And that's kind of it. And it actually wasn't too challenging. Like, it wasn't too difficult. I was playing on moderate, mm-hmm. which is normal. It wasn't too difficult. It was a little challenging to try to sneak past everyone. But there were actually a couple of times where I literally just ran right past everyone and there were no consequences. They couldn't catch me. So to me, that was kind of poor design.
Right.
There's a point, to give a specific example of that, there was a point where your Abby and you're trying to escape with Yara and Lev through a cornfield. I think it's Yara and Lev at that point. Anyway, you're going through a cornfield, and I was sneaking past and doing stealth kills. And then at some point I thought, because I was also doing a collectibles run,
uh-huh.
I was like, wait, if the thing that I'm looking for is on that table right over there, I can see it. What if I just ran, grabbed it, and left? So I ran, grabbed it, and left. And got to the next thing, which triggered a mini cutscene, and then that reset the enemies back to the specific point where they're supposed to be.
Oh, okay.
And I was able to just get away with it.
Right.
And again, that was on moderate. So anyway, player agency is important for storytelling as well in a video game. Now with The Last of Us, I will say Last of Us 2, because of that, could have been done as a movie. Now you could easily level the same complaints at The Last of Us, the original,
mm-hmm.
but the original Last of Us was told better to me, mm-hmm. and the bonding between Joel and Ellie was part of the gameplay.
Okay.
And Last of Us Part 2, there wasn't as much of that, partly because with the original Last of Us, it really worked because you met Ellie at the same time Joel did, so you bonded with her at the same time he did.
Right.
With Last of Us Part 2, a lot of the newer characters have just... You're supposed to have the impression they have this history, but they're not written very interestingly beyond mm-hmm. that.
Okay. Now, I noticed that you brought some other games with you.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about... I assume they have something to do with your feelings about Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah, because in my review, I decided to briefly go into games that talked about the... Because the main thing of this is Last of Us 2 is a cycle of violence
mm-hmm.
and the acts of revenge. So I decided to, in my review, talk about certain games that talked about the cycle of violence or just had dark themes but did it better.
Okay.
Undertale, for instance. I'm holding up the... I played the PS4 version, but right now I'm just holding up the sealed Switch copy because it was easier to dig out.
Yeah, I was wondering, you played it, but it's sealed.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Undertale. The cycle of violence is a major part of the storyline. However, that was also a core aspect of the gameplay. You can literally go the entire game without killing a single person. And your actions change the narrative and the ending.
Hmm. Yeah, so the ending though of Last of Us Part 2, I assume there's more of a trend now to let you kind of as the player have how kind of lead the game to how it's going to end. Here you really don't have a choice.
Yeah, you do. There's a climactic in Last of Us 2. Again, major spoilers in case at this point didn't.
Hadn't played it.
Yeah. Anyway, in The Last of Us 2, there's a climactic fight between Ellie and Abby on a beach. I showed you that.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellie lets Abby go, and you can't change that.
Right.
It felt odd for her to let her go because she had already killed like hundreds of people or at least 100 people to get to that point. And then suddenly at the very end she decides, oh, this is too far.
Right. It seemed kind of, it didn't seem real. Realistic. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you really want to kill somebody and you kill 100 people to get to them, you think you're going to kill the person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's debatable if it was justified, but
well,
I think it would have gone down better if you had a choice.
Right.
With Undertale, you have a choice.
Right.
And it even goes so far as to make you saving and loading the game a plot point. Not going to say how.
Right.
But that was done very cleverly.
Okay.
Metal Gear Solid 3. That's signed by Greg Berger.
Okay.
But anyway, Metal Gear Solid 3. I brought that up because I saw this video by the YouTuber Nakey Jakey, who talks about video games.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought up a really good... In his video about The Last of Us 2, he brought up this really good point. In Metal Gear Solid 3, you have the option to kill or sneak past everyone. Because it's a stealth game, ideally you wouldn't get into a situation where you kill people.
Right.
And if you were to shoot people, you can do it non-lethally. There is a boss called The Sorrow, whose fight takes place in this river, and all these... He's a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And in this river, all these spirits come toward you. And it turns out that those spirits are all the people you chose to kill.
Oh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you want to say you showed that. Or,
yeah.
That was pretty cool.
And so the length of the fight and how difficult it is depends on how many people you decided to actually lethally attack in the game. I will say there are, even if you go through it non-lethally, you have to go past the four Cobra unit members because there just has to be something.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, if you had chosen to go through the game non-lethally, the fight is much easier.
Okay.
And so you actually have control over that aspect of the game.
Okay.
So another one I brought up was Spec Ops The Line.
Yeah, holding up the video game.
Clear shot. So, in Spec Ops The Line, it's about the character Walker, mm-hmm. his mental deterioration as he fights in Dubai during a war. And there is one scene you can't change. I'm not going to actually spoil that because it's a very powerful moment, but there are points where you do have a choice on what to do. Like, for example, one character is strung up by the people,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like the game makes you shoot the civilians, but what it doesn't tell you, and is interesting to figure out, is if you shoot above the civilians, they will just scatter.
Okay, makes sense.
So you kind of choose how far Walker goes in certain situations. And then the ending of the game, you actually get to decide if Walker actually learned anything from his... what he learned at that point was senseless destruction that he caused and blamed on someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to pick if he actually learned anything, and that changes the ending. If he, depending on which ending you pick, you then get to decide if something else happens. Right. Like, if he goes peacefully or not.
Okay.
So you actually do have some control over that, and it handles the cycle of violence on part of the player as a central part of the narrative.
Okay.
I did bring up another... The last one I brought up was Ghost of Tsushima, which would have been Trevor's pick for Game of the Year.
Right.
Let's make sure you can clearly...
Rolling up the...
Yeah.
The game.
I didn't play it, but Trevor did. It handled the... it handled the revenge, from what he played, it handled the revenge themes better.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's more about main character Jin Sakai and how he feels about how he approaches defending Japan from the Mongols. It takes place during that part of Japanese history.
Mm-hmm.
And he's torn between the self-destructive ways of the samurai. Like, the honor of the samurai is attacking your enemies from the front. However, he realizes that that causes needless deaths.
Right.
So he, you have the option to have him adopt the ways of the ninja, which is considered dishonorable because you're attacking the enemy from behind, but it saves more lives.
Right.
So he's torn between that while you're playing the game.
Hmm.
And he does inevitably get his revenge against Khotun Khan for attacking Japan. But then the very ending of the game, you have a choice on how it ends.
So I think that's sort of how the game should be going.
Yeah.
That's what separates them from a movie.
Yeah.
You know, because
the interactive element is what makes a game a game.
Right.
For this discussion, right here.
Okay.
I decided to bring out one more game.
Okay.
Silent Hill 2. Just make sure you can see that for those who are watching.
All right.
It was Silent Hill 2. It's about James Sunderland going through the town of Silent Hill, and he's confronting his own personal demons.
Okay.
But that's handled really well, and I forget which year this was made. It was in the early 2000s, I know that for sure.
Uh-huh.
But it's filled with all this symbolism that's really powerful when you realize what it is. Like, for example, the purpose of the iconic pyramid head that was introduced in Silent Hill 2.
Right.
When you realize what pyramid head represents, that's actually very powerful. And then there's also another interactive element that could only be shown in a video game, which was at the beginning, and is in your inventory, you have his letter from Mary, and over the course of the game it disappears.
Hmm.
First the text disappears, then the letter disappears, and the envelope disappears.
That's weird.
So then you're wondering if it was actually real all along.
Oh, or just imagine it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, did he make it up?
Hmm.
And there are actually like 6 different endings, although admittedly 2 of them are joke endings. That's because they're, I guess as a Japanese developer, they thought they could have, you know, just have a little fun.
Right.
But there are 4 more serious endings. And the game handles handles these, I guess at the time, taboo topics. Like suicide,
mm-hmm.
just to name one,
right?
And it handles them in a very mature and, you could say, tasteful way. And you encounter other people throughout the town, or 2 other people during the town who are seeing their own personal demons coming to life,
mm-hmm.
and you see them slowly deteriorate as well.
Right.
And so when you get to the very end, it turns out the ending you get is determined by your general behavior. And what, like, if James interacts with specific... If you as the player interact with specific objects, like if you look at a knife in your inventory, that's one trigger for one ending. Or part one of a series of triggers for one ending.
Uh-huh.
Or if you look at Mary's picture often, then that helps guide the game towards one ending.
Okay.
And so on. So the way you approach the game determines the ending, and then because there is no definitive ending to that game, you get to pick based on your interpretation of James's personal demons and his tragic past, which one makes more sense to you.
Okay. So are these games that you've talked about, are they also on reviewed on Trophy Unlocked?
Yes, they are.
And so people can go there to see your and Trevor's opinions about these video games. Or he wrote some of the reviews as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So going back to The Last of Us 2.
Right.
It is not the worst thing ever made, because it did do some things well, but it's also not a 10 out of 10 game of the year winning masterpiece.
Okay.
In terms of its writing or its direction or whatever awards.
It won pretty much everything.
Yeah. But it's a very disappointing follow-up to the original game. And this is also coming from someone who liked Uncharted 4 and The Lost Legacy, which was the two games before that. So that makes me worried about the direction the company is going to take in the future, especially since The Last of Us 2 did win all those awards. That doesn't necessarily create an incentive to change.
And the company you're talking about is?
Naughty Dog.
Okay. Just, you have to make sure everybody...
Yeah.
Okay.
But putting outside stuff aside, I'm not really sure I would recommend The Last of Us Part 2. Because it was 30 hours that I'm not sure I would get back.
Okay. All right.
And I will say, I did go for this one last thing. I did actually get the Platinum Trophy, but only because it was easy.
All right. So, again, these are all available on Trophy Unlocked.
Yes.
So, and what is going on with Trophy Unlocked? Besides this, just to bring it up, we're doing Christmas and video games, right?
Yeah.
So there's other things going on. And you see this going on for a while.
Yeah, I don't know how long, but we keep coming up with ideas and things we could do. Like, at one point we want to reevaluate our opinions of the Star Wars prequels because of how disappointing the sequels turned out to be, with all three of them in context. And other stuff like that.
I know I've got like 40 or so reviews that I've done. So yeah, we got stuff for a while. Just kind of like bringing it back to Power Squared, we have a lot of ideas still to go.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Do you have any other questions about The Last of Us 2?
No, I think you kind of covered everything, don't you think?
Yeah.
All right.
I did go in a little more in depth in the review.
All right.
So I would also encourage reading that. All right. Again, that's trophyunlocked.blogspot.com.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about? Again, congratulations, though, on 10 years. That's a long time to dedicate yourself to doing something.
Yeah.
And you should be, you know, I think that's a big accomplishment. I'm proud of you for doing that.
Yeah.
As the fun. Every so often I have to remind people of that.
I guess I'll mention at the time of this recording, since I have the original Spyro trilogy on PS1, I was playing that.
Okay.
So in that way, when I get around to playing Spyro Reignited, I will know exactly what they changed or didn't change.
Okay.
And then I imagine that as a whole series on its own. I am also working on doing other series of reviews, like the five Shantae games that are out, as I really like that series. And because the PS5 is a thing, we're going to have actual PS5 content sometime in the near future.
All right. Okay. I think that's so we now kind of know why you did it.
Yeah.
We talked about the major review that was your 10th year anniversary and kind of the future of the blog.
Yeah.
Okay. We encourage people, when they're not reading Power Squared, to go to Trophy Unlocked.
blogspot.com
and read. There's 1120, over 1,100 reviews there, 1125 as of today.
Yeah.
There'll be more tomorrow. There'll be more the next week. Every Wednesday, and it seems like every Wednesday and Saturday, at least, we put out a review.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of content, and there's a lot of stuff to look at in the going back.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm always fascinated by is that older reviews, people go back and, like, something I, you know, again, Romeo and Juliet always surprised me how many people look at that on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But that the fact that was something that was done years ago and people still go back to it.
Yeah.
It's kind of very interesting. The fact that people dig and read older stuff is kind of cool.
And I guess speaking of older reviews, I wasn't too happy with some of them.
Right.
So I do plan to in the future redo some of them. But also still have newer stuff coming out. Like, for example, I do have a bunch of Prince of Persia reviews ready to go for when they put up the remake of Sands of Time. And I actually thought of replaying the original Assassin's Creed game as a Prince of Persia title.
Okay. Well, I'll look forward to that.
Yeah.
Okay. next week is Christmas.
Yes.
And we will have a special on the air with Power Squared.
Yeah.
Which we've pre-taped with actress Sue Price, who will be on to talk about herself and her love of Power Squared.
That's right.
So that's something to look forward to next week. So until then, I'm David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And you've been on the air with Power Squared.